persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The Brain Massage Show releases truth antibodies in the brain that attack and destroy liberal lies. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse in your brain bazooka. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Folks, I'm struggling with a cold. Let's rush the DayQuil. We'll get you through the show this afternoon. Well, what shall we talk about? The Democratic debate wins the Yonner Award. So, assuming you probably watched NCIS Tuesday night instead of the sleeping pill called the DNC debate, allow me to bring you up to speed on the salient points of that debate. First, who watched? CNN set a new record for a Democratic debate, an average of 15.3 million viewers, as opposed to the 24 million that viewed the GOP debate hosted by Fox News, and then the 23 million that viewed the GOP debate hosted by CNN. Oh, I should mention, and as opposed to the 15.7 million who preferred watching Mark Harmon catch the bad guy, you know, star of CBS drama NCIS and the narcissistic sexually juvenile adult child, the guy Gibbs slaps in the back of the head all the time, with about 10 sexual nuances per 10 minutes. I mean, it's not unlike hanging around with some teenager who just discovered an interest in girls. But anyway, think about this as a testament to the state of the nation. 15.7 million people were being entertained by a crime drama in which the scriptwriters carefully craft the characters in such a way you can't help but like them. And then, of course, include all kinds of deviant fetishes and crass disregard for the sanctity of marriage and trivializing sex and occasionally promoting the deadly, perverse, and unnatural homosexual lifestyle to boot. And then all of this revolving around an old guy playing the hero who just grins it off. I wonder how many brain cells are murdered every episode. Of course, you obviously can tell that I've watched a few of these. And more importantly, this stuff presses the soul into a mold that distorts it and deadens its natural moral sensors. That light by which Jesus lighted every man, giving him a conscience, and that faith dealt to every man that gives them some connection to the grace of God, activating the moral compass that points true. Then you got another 15.3 million being told that Hillary's carelessness with her emails as Secretary of State, with the very real concern that she's compromised national security, along with her obvious involvement in the Benghazi cover-up with that movie Made Him Do It lie, and the stonewalling that has been perpetrated by both Obama and Hillary as they obstruct justice, you know, which gave them time to hide evidence. Bernie got the biggest applause of the night, saying effectively that a cry for justice is just something the American people are tired of hearing about. Well, that's all very concerning. Happily, however, we also had 24 million tune into the GOP debates, where at least we had a panel of Americans on the stage, unlike this dim debate parading their socialist policies. And one of them, at least Bernie, announcing himself as a socialist. You know, at least now they're being honest about what they've been trying to do all along. Well, almost honest. They are openly pushing socialism now. Give them a few more years, and when they think the country's ready for it, they'll start openly pushing full-blown communism. Now, these people won't be satisfied till they have their hands on all of our property, and they control it, where the politicians control it all. Let me tell you how this is going. Their liberal policies have failed, right? And so they say, well, what we need is socialism to make them work. When they get socialism, you lose about half your liberties. And then when that fails, then they'll say, well, what we need is communism to make it work. And when you get communism, you've lost all your liberties. And then it no longer matters if it works. They've got you. Anyway, we expect the media establishment to find some way to denigrate the viewers of the GOP debate and say the disparity between the GOP debate and the DNC debate, that is in numbers of viewers, is an anomaly, explained by the fact that 24 million people tuned into the GOP debate as opposed to the 15.3 million who tuned into the DNC debate is only because of the sensationalism of the TV guy Donald. All right, and so many tuned in merely to hear what the Trumpster would say next. You know what our Fortune writer, that's a fellow from Fortune magazine, is the article I'm reading from here, and that writer might not be taking into account the fact that Trump has stirred up so much interest because of his take on the illegal immigration issue. And so it's not surprising that it was a tweet from the Donald on that topic that rose to the top of all the debate twittering that went on in the course of the evening. Oh, yeah. Old Trump trumped him again. He managed to steal at least some of the DNC thunder by promising to tweet his responses to the debate in real time. And then one of his tweets trumped all the others for the night. Quote, notice that illegal immigrants will get Obamacare and free college tuition, but nothing has been mentioned about our veterans, end quote. I thought that was an astute observation. According to the Fortune article I have here, quote, the tweet netted 15,000 retweets and 23,000 favorites, which Trump then posted on his Facebook and received responses something to the tune of more than 100,000 likes and 23,000 shares. Nevertheless, it does appear in all of this that Americans are interested in this upcoming election, and that most of them are watching the GOP candidates closely. Well, that's who watched. Now, what did they say? I think the salient statements were these. First, the shots that were taken at the right. Sanders angrily expresses his frustration with Citizens United, a conservative group that is aggressively promoting conservative candidates and that presents itself as dedicated to restoring the U.S. government to the control of its citizens. Now, that's something that threatens a guy like Sanders, you see. Sanders wants the government to do everything for you, take care of you, give you free health care, give you free education, take the wealth of the top 1% and distribute it to the rest of you. This is just amazing. But the cost of doing that is something he calls democratic socialism. Now, democratic socialism is a deal whereby you democratically vote away your own private property rights in order to give you access to the property of others. You democratically vote away your own private property rights in order to give government the power to act like a tyrant, a big bully, and to steal the private property from the rich for the so-called public good. You know, like Trump advocates, right? Using eminent domain to take property from citizens in order to build a factory employing 5,000 people. Same thing. When you vote away your property rights in order to give government the right to steal the private property of others for the so-called public good, it will not be long before government will take all your private property for the government's good and for their own use. And then they'll say, well, it's good for you. You know, the fat cat politicians will ride the jets, drive the big cars, smoke the big cigars. They'll have the widescreen TVs, the air-conditioned homes. They'll live in mansions. In other words, they'll take the place of the so-called 1%. And then they'll say to you, it's better for you to live with a smaller carbon footprint, while they, like Godzilla, stomp across the land, leaving their Godzilla print on your back. Now, this is likely the most important takeaway from this debate. For the first time in America's history, a politician declaring himself to be a socialist is actually getting traction with a significant percentage of the electorate in a major political party. Anyway, Citizens United is effective, and they are really getting under the skin of the progs. I get petitions from the left almost every day trying to raise money to stop Citizens United. One of the things the left really dislikes about Citizens United is how effective they have been at stopping the left from disallowing the people who own and operate corporations from having the protections of their free speech by the First Amendment, you know, through their funding of projects, candidates, causes, and so on that represent their interests. And, you know, it really bothers libs when corporate money goes to conservative causes, but it's not a problem to them when it comes from corporations like, well, Planned Parenthood, or many others, by the way, that I can name, but that's the focus of our attention right now. Planned Parenthood, you know, that sells baby body parts and bilks the taxpayer for $500 million-plus per year and contributes millions to the leftist causes and candidates. The hypocrisy of people like Bernie and Hillary et al. Is only outdone by their even more disturbing socialist agenda, but more on that in a moment. Bernie is alarmed that America might become an oligarchy controlled by a handful of billionaires. Amen. How about we stop the un-American subversive activities of billionaire George Soros and any number of these other liberal progressive billionaires? The oligarchy of Soros, Obama, Reid, and Pelosi didn't bother Bernie. No complaint from him about how the Dems railroaded Obamacare into law, the unlawful and just downright unfair manner that Congress conducted its business during that debacle. No problem for Bernie. That sort of oligarchy doesn't bother him. An oligarchy of the Supreme Court, in which the making of laws is taken from the Congress and invested in the hands of 9 lawyers. Now, that doesn't bother old Bernie. But let an organization build a grassroots movement such as Citizens United has done, and let it become effective, and the progs pull out one of their oldest tricks. They then accuse it of doing what they, in fact, are trying to do. It's Bernie who wants an oligarchy. A few men with power to impose their will over everybody else. That's exactly what socialism is. Just because you call it democratic doesn't change what it is. Just because the people can be tricked into voting away their liberty, the foundations of liberty, private property, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience. All these things are being given up to the politicians in exchange for what? Access to, assuming that they're going to get access to the property of the 1%. Access to the public trough, at least. That is, access to the earnings and property of others. But you see, we believe in what our founders taught us, that all men are created equal, and we don't need Bernie to make us equal. We are created equal, and we have been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. And so anybody who thinks they can vote my rights away is mistaken. I need to wrap up the first segment here. Recently, I watched a documentary on Sobibor. You know, that over 6 million Jews were murdered under the socialist system of the Nazis. There's one thing I wish they had done. That was to follow the pattern of Sobibor. You didn't know that Germany was socialist, did you, during Hitler's reign of terror? Oh, yeah. Ever hear of the National Socialist Party? Let's let National Review Goldberg talk to us a bit about this. Goldberg cites Nazi Gregor Strausser speaking for the Nazis' National Socialist Party. That Nazi said, quote, "We are socialists. We are enemies, deadly enemies, of today's capitalist economic system with its exploitation of the economically weak, its unfair wage system, its immoral way of judging the worth of human beings in terms of their wealth and their money instead of their responsibility and their performance, and we are determined to destroy this system whatever happens," end quote. Huh, sounds a lot like Bernie, eh? You see, national socialism is something of a redundancy. Nationalism, socialism, basically, these terms are synonymous. National health care, anyone? The nationalization of health care is socialism, something Reagan warned us about way back there. Oh, another famous socialist, Stalin. Take a look at history. No tyrant has ever used capitalism to bring a country under his power. He always used socialism. The reason is simple. Capitalism is about private property rights, the right and power of individuals to build and keep wealth. The fact that some individuals manage to amass greater amounts of wealth than others in a free market system speaks to the ingenuity, inventiveness, and so on of the individual. But in a capitalist system, at least everyone benefits in some measure. Jobs are created, the wealth of the entire nation benefits. When politicians take over the wealth of the nation, it's no longer about freedom. It's no longer about individual risk-taking and ingenuity and so on. It's all about politics. The people confiscating the wealth never earned it. They only stole it. And then they use it to dole out to the masses over which they have installed themselves as the masters. Oh, by the way, and spend a cool $4 million to go play golf, Mr. Obama. Socialism is a tyrant's favorite path to totalitarianism. The one thing you should take away from the dim debate is that they've made clear what separates the conservative candidates on the right from the socialist candidates on the left. Liberty and justice for all on the conservative side, and government handouts and the obstruction of justice to protect inept, lying, and or criminal politicians on the left. Hang on through the break. I'll be right back.
Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face with, to confront. The greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps it's been a while since you've experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Or perhaps you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015. And when you do, you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Betaravia Road, Santa Maria. Come to the Lighthouse this Sunday morning to hear Pastor Scheidbach present another exciting and inspirational message in a series entitled Encounter God. Go to santamarialighthouse.org.
Lighthouse Baptist Church and the Brain Masseur invite you to this year's Lights On Banquet. Reserve your seat for the November 13 Lights On Banquet. The God and Gunclinger Home Defense Kit will be awesome this year. We've given a Mossberg shotgun, an AR-15, a loaded 1911, 45 with wooden grips. Nice. This year? Oh, can't wait to find out. Call 1-888-770-8000 to register right away. Get your early registration discount, only $15 each through October 15. All early registrants receive one extra drawing ticket for each two paid guests that attend the banquet. Call right away to reserve your seat at the Lights On Banquet, 1-888-770-8000. And don't forget Lou's succulent tri-tip meal and the live performance of a brain massage radio show. $15 each till October 15, then prices go to $20 each. Seats are limited, so call today.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Now, again, bear with me. I'm battling a cold, probably one of the more severe colds I've ever had to deal with. Let's trust the Lord will help me and stay clear-headed here, because we've got some important things to bring out about what went on in that debate. You've heard about the poll that asked 1,500-plus Americans what was the first word that came to mind at the mention of this or that candidate's name, and then the result that most Americans associate the words liar and dishonest with Hillary. You know, the same poll tells us most Americans think Trump is arrogant. The number one response to Jeb Bush's name was Bush. I am assuming referring to Bush, too. But according to this ABC News article, it wasn't all bad. Quote, voters did connect some positive words with these three candidates. Clinton was hailed as qualified, strong, and intelligent. Trump was thought of as bold, interesting, and successful. Most likely, given that Trump has never held office before, voters also associated the word change with Trump. For Bush, honest was mentioned 73 times, along with nice and trustworthy. You know what's odd? I can't find any mention of the responses to this question for Cruz, Carson, Huckabee, or any of the others. Were they not part of this poll? So I dug up the full text of the poll to find them, and sure enough, they're mentioned in the poll, but this question wasn't asked regarding them. That's interesting, isn't it? Also, if you add all the responses regarding Hillary that are related in one way or the other to her being dishonest, it's no wonder that this is very embarrassing to her. Here are all the words related to dishonesty that came up against Hillary. Liar, dishonest, untrustworthy, crook, untruthful, criminal, deceitful, corrupt, crooked, cheat, deceptive, thief, and devious. You put all those together, you have 518 respondents view Hillary as deceptive. And that's way out of balance with any characteristic brought up about Trump or Jeb, by the way. I mean, out of 1,500 responders, that's about 34% of them who think Hillary is a liar. However, when you study them deeply, these polls, they have to be weighted for how many party loyalists are in the mix and other things. And I don't have time to go into it all. But the bottom line is, after I've examined it thoroughly, it must be distressing for Hillary that fully a third, or better than a third of those in this poll, consider her to be a liar. I think the establishment GOP must figure Bush will likely beat out Trump in the end, and you know that when it comes down to it, the voters will favor the calm and collected GOP poster child, Jeb Bush, over the bombastic, volatile Trumpster. So I think you can watch them attempt to manipulate things to narrowly focus on Trump and Bush. You put Bush against Cruz, it's a no-brainer. Cruz wins hands down. Well, let's see here. Here you go. Obamacare put out $2.4 billion for startup insolvency funding to launch 23 co-op startups. That's the insurance companies that the government started. In the last 10 months, six of these insurance companies created under Obamacare, and that together, between them, received in excess of $760 million tax dollars, are folding up, throwing in the towel, kaput. Also, 22 of the 24 companies lost money in 2014. No one should be surprised, but some of you probably are. Here's one sad example of the government in business with business. From the Daily Signal, why six government-funded insurance companies created under Obamacare collapsed. Quote, for example, Co-Opportunity, a co-op that received $145 million in loans from the government, expected to enroll just 12,000 consumers in Iowa and Nebraska during its first year on the exchange. Well, by the end of the first open enrollment period in 2013, the co-op ended up enrolling a whopping 120,000, far exceeding its projections. End quote. Wow. Now you might ask, well, why did so many flock to this company? Here's the answer. Quote, the co-op offered the cheapest plans available to consumers in the two states, and as a result of the influx of consumers, officials learned they didn't make enough from premium costs to cover their customers' medical claims. End quote. Well, what do you know about that? It's not free after all, is it? Co-Opportunity announced in January that it would be liquidated, leaving more than 100,000 customers to find new plans. End quote. I wonder if in this liquidation, the taxpayer will get their money back. I guess we'll see. Quote, At the time the co-op announced its liquidation, it was not yet known if Cooperativity would be able to repay the $145 million it received in startup and solvency loans. All right. Well, that's socialism for you folks. When it has a friendly face, it fails because it can't provide on its promises. But what about when it has an ugly face? You know, when it sports a small mustache over terse lips with narrow, dark, and beady eyes and hair plastered down over its forehead, then it takes on a different sort of efficiency. It betrays a remarkable efficiency in killing people. Now, I don't know if America is ready to vote away her liberties. I hope not. I'm preaching a message Sunday night that talks about what part we can have in turning this thing around, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. But as I close today's show, consider Sobibor, one of the death camps or extermination camps operated by Hitler's Himmler's henchmen. I mentioned earlier that I watched a documentary recently on Sobibor, where hundreds of thousands of Jews were cremated in the ovens there, for no other crime than that they were Jews. I'm reading excerpts from this Wikipedia article. Sobibor was a Nazi German extermination camp located on the outskirts of the village of Sobibor in occupied Poland during World War II. Jews were transported to Sobibor by rail and suffocated in gas chambers fed by the exhaust of a large petrol engine. Up to 200,000 people were murdered at Sobibor, and possibly more. At the post-war trial against the former SS personnel of Sobibor, held in Hagen, Professor Wolfgang Scheffler estimated the total number of murdered Jews to be somewhere in the area of 250,000 as a minimum. Now this week, October 14, happened to mark the anniversary of the famous revolt of 14 October 1943, when about 600 prisoners rose up and tried to escape. About half of them succeeded in crossing the fence, and then about another half of those made it across the minefield that encircled the camp, and all but about 60 were recaptured or died in the effort to escape recapture. Now some of these became outspoken about keeping the memory of what happened at Sobibor alive for future generations, and they've done it. The Nazis attempted to hide it. Shortly after the revolt, the Nazis closed the camp, bulldozed the earth, and planted it over with pine trees. But those who escaped remembered, and the site has been excavated, and proof has been found of the vile inhumanity of those Nazi socialists. From this article, we read, quote, in September 2014, a team of archaeologists unearthed remains of the gas chambers under the asphalt road. They also discovered a pendant inscribed with the word Palestine in Hebrew, English, and Arabic, dating from 1927, earrings, a wedding band, bearing a Hebrew inscription, and perfume bottles that belonged to the Jewish victims. The items are found in a cistern sealed off by the Germans during the liquidation of the camp. End quote. Now today, the site is occupied by the Sobibor Museum, which displays a pyramid of ashes and crushed bones of the victims collected from the cremation pits thereafter. Now, let me tell you what Sobibor teaches us. Well, many things, of course, but with regard to our brain massage for today, as I conclude. First, socialism is a system that is built upon the idea that the way to solve this problem of disparity is that we need to trample down the rights of the property owner to give his property to others who have not earned it. Capitalism, on the other hand, is a system whereby the property owner offers a job to those with less, and in a system like ours, that person with less is free to engage his labor and invest with ingenuity and build his own capital. Or he can live out his life in the employ of others if he chooses. But consistently in this system, more people gain access to more of the wealth of the nation than in any other system. In socialism, the government takes the place of God, and there must be a fundamental loss of the inalienable right to be free in the marketplace, that the means of production becomes the property of the state, and that means effectively it becomes the property of the political caste that rules over the peons, and everyone works for the government, and that these pious gas bags pretend is the people. For example, with socialized medicine, the government can't make it work without taking away your right to choose your own doctor. It can't work without the government taking away your right to decide what procedures you will buy and take away your rights regarding what treatments you will pay for and all this. And you're tricked into going in for this by pointing to those who don't have the means to purchase what medical care they want or need. And then, instead of saying, you know, hey, let's make competition more vigorous in the medical field, the government, instead of that, steps in and makes competition unnecessary, or actually becomes a competitor that ruins everything, or actually sets up which companies win and which companies lose, which is always a disaster because it becomes politicized. Now, I've got to conclude. But what I'm saying is that socialism must take away human rights. And one way they do this is by redefining human rights into, for example, the right to health care. If they make health care a right, then all society must surrender their right to private property in order to meet the demands of everybody who has a right to health care. Follow along here. Every one of the rights that the left promotes today necessarily requires the forfeiture of what we have considered our inalienable rights up till now. Are you noticing? It's happening with the homosexual agenda and all of it. I'm out of time, but watch how this works. I have a right to the ownership of the fruits of my labor and the property I may legally procure with it. That's a fundamental right. It's in the Bible, by the way. It's a God-endowed right. For man is recognized as having the right to the fruit of his labor, and he can hire out his labor for a wage, or he can invest his labor in hopes of private gain. But it's his right, and he has freedom. Now, this freedom, or these rights, invariably put restrictions on what others can do. That's the idea of a right. A right is something others have an obligation to recognize and defer to, isn't it? I have a right of ownership of my labor, and therefore no one can force me into a labor camp, because I own it. And therefore no union can force me to subordinate my right over my labor to them, right? Of course, right. With that freedom, he also has responsibility, and he must employ his labor in such a way as will procure for him what is necessary to get what he needs, including health care. Now, all of a sudden, health care becomes a fundamental right of man. Remember, the fundamental principle of a right involves restricting what others can do. In this case, as is the case, by the way, with all of the lefties' false rights that they're inventing these days, it does not merely restrict what others can do. No, those false rights actually end up requiring others to do something for me or for others, whether I have earned it or not. With every legitimate right, others are restricted from interference with that right, but are under no obligation otherwise. With every false right, there will always be this characteristic. It will invariably require others to do something for you that necessarily involves invading their privacy, compromising their conscience, or violating their property rights. That's what exposes the so-called right to health care as a false right. Every legitimate right will restrict the behavior of others to some degree, but every false right will require behavior from others that necessarily violates their natural rights to one degree or another. A right to health care necessarily requires me to provide for another something he should provide for himself. And if he cannot provide it, he is dependent upon the gracious generosity of those willing to exercise their right to do good with what is their own. And that's in the Bible. If government steps in, it's all a mess. Those who are recipients of the property that has been stolen from others are never the better, because now they have become dependents and they are beneficiaries of the theft the government has perpetrated upon others. Government becomes a gang of thieves taking from those they decide that they can take it from and then giving it to those they choose to give it to. It's demoralizing and dehumanizing. The choice before America in this election has been made clear. It's between freedom versus the shackles of socialism. That's your choice, America. Choose wisely. And by the way, the lesson of Sobibor is that freedom is so precious, it's worth risking your life for it, and it's worth laying down your life among 540 if 60 out of the 600 can have it. And this, the most important lesson, is that if you do not resist, you will certainly be gassed. I have lit the lamps of the church belfry arch. Now you call, let me know you see that they are on. You say, lights on if you see the lights are on. Well, ride like Revere and spread the warning. Say, lights off if you disagree with me, and I welcome all response, positive or negative. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Or go to thebrainmassageshow.com, and you'll see a place there to write me an email. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Are you ready for a renewed experience of God with a fresh encounter this year? Or maybe you've never experienced God and he doesn't seem real to you. Get ready to encounter God and know that he is real. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon